Alrighty, welcome back in. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. You'll hear from Stephon Marbury coming up at 5:35 p.m. Eastern Time today. I watched two documentaries recently. One is kind of oldish now. The other was just released. I ended up watching that Chiefsaholic. I think it was on my flight to Vegas. You got some crazy people, by the way. But like, the fact that that dude thought like he was actually a big deal in the Chiefs kingdom. And I always thought like super fans and things like that to be crazy. But how he would be going around from city to city, state to state, and robbing banks to basically, I don't know, fund his Chiefs fandom and then also pay off his gambling debts. It's just a wild story. But then the people that they interviewed in that documentary were just some of the craziest of crazies that were also like Chiefs super fans. And then I never got this part. While he was on the run, his mother was also like on the run, but they weren't going after her. And this investigator that I guess that they hired, like the family that helped that represented him. Did you watch his Chiefsaholic, Sam Turtle? No? Oh, you were giggling. That's why I thought you watched it and you knew where I was going here. She would be like urinating in bags and then leaving them in the car that they abandoned, but he was on the run somewhere else. And then she was, I don't know why she was on the run. So that was, the whole thing was bizarre. I also watched the shooting guards documentary. I think that's what it's called, with Gilbert Arenas and Javaris Crittenton. Now, I didn't know this. And we all remember what happened, right? The guns in the locker room and then them both getting suspended. Gilbert Arenas eventually made a return to the NBA. Javaris Crittenton got like some tryouts somewhere else and then they ended up getting rid of him. But we all know what eventually happened. Javaris Crittenton, who thought it was smart to basically play like hitmen, you know, in real life, he got robbed or something and then he tried to go, I guess you could say, make amends for it or get a little payback. And then he went to go shoot the person that robbed him. And then he hit, unfortunately, a mother of four. Right? Like, I remember when this happened. And it was just like the scum of the earth in Javaris Crittenton. He only served 10 years in prison. He was supposed to serve 22. He's out. Because when I first heard this, I'm like, they're doing a documentary of Gilbert Arenas. Sam, do me a favor. Can you just pull up what the name of the documentary is? I think it's called Shooting Guards. But they were doing a documentary with Gilbert Arenas and Javaris Crittenton. And I go, what are they just going to be interviewing? It is Shooting Guards on Netflix. Thank you. I go, what are they going to be just doing a documentary with him like in jail? He got out. So you want to know how he got out? Or what the theory is that they float in this documentary? I didn't know this, but Javaris Crittenton, I guess, was high school teammates with Dwight Howard. The DA on the case was Dwight Howard's uncle. So the mother, who gave like a really emotional interview, I felt horrible for her, of the mother of the lady, I forget her name, who unfortunately got hit and murdered by Javaris Crittenton, the mother of four. She, usually they were interviewing her mother and they said, hey, usually when these things come out, when they let someone out early, they usually talk to the family if that's okay. And she said, nope, we just got a message one day that he was out early. And he got out after 10 years when he was supposed to serve 22. If he did some things in jail, like he was eligible to get out early. But I guess that deal was kind of made with the DA who was Dwight Howard's uncle, which I didn't think that was going to be the connection there. But if you got, I think it's like an hour 30, it's 90 minutes max. If you got 90 minutes, it was a very, very, very interesting documentary where you hear from Javaris Crittenton, you hear from Gilbert Arenas, and also, unfortunately, the mother of the lady who was murdered by Javaris Crittenton and many others. So it's weird to say that's a good watch, but it was a compelling watch. It was definitely something that I thought was worthwhile. Anyway, without further ado, I'm not talking about Freddie Adu. It's time to do a little onside, offside on this Monday. Stu's got some questions for me. I'll try to give you some answers on this very busy Monday edition of the Zach Gelb Show. Stu, take it away.
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside. Defense number 69.
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb.
All righty, Stu, what do we got cooking?
All right, so the NFL has announced the opening game for the 2025 season. And as usual, the Super Bowl champions are involved. The Eagles will host their NFC East rival, Dallas Cowboys, on Thursday, September 4th. So Onsides, Offsides, this is the best possible opening game matchup for the league.
It's not a bad one, don't get me wrong. It's Eagles-Cowboys, and also you have to have Jerry Jones go into the stadium, so he gets to see the Eagles raise another championship banner. But you look at the home games for the Philadelphia Eagles. Giants, Commanders, Bears, Lions, Broncos, Raiders, Rams. I understand the fan appeal of doing it Eagles-Cowboys, but if you tell me, okay, neutral guy like me, let's just say, Thursday Night Football, open up the season, you got the Eagles at the link. I would rather see them go up against the Lions. I would rather even see an NFC Championship game rematch up against the Washington Commanders. Or even so, I'd be intrigued as a football fan. What do the Bears look like? Give them the standard. Give them the Eagles, the defending Super Bowl champions, where you have Chicago with Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams and company. So I think those three destinations or those three potential matchups would have been better than just saying, oh, we'll put the Cowboys and the Eagles on Thursday Night Football to open up the season. So this is the best possible opening game matchup for the league. I would go offside.
Offside.
We're continuing offside streak. I think I went 7 on Friday.
Yeah, you're 7 of 7 on Friday.
Now this is 8 in a row. This is in the history of the Zach Gelb show, the most offsides I've ever done in a row. We'll see if we'll break the streak here.
All right, so speaking of the drama, Dallas choking Cowboys, their new wide receiver acquisition is already making noise. In a response to a post about Steelers players Beanie Bishop and Peyton Wilson, George Pickens tweeted and then since has deleted a comment saying, quote, "The Steelers are the cheapest organization. Ain't no stacking year after year.
Oh, boy.
They're going to let them," and he says the N-words, "go too soon as it's time," end of quote. Onsides, Offsides, Pickens will be disgruntled in Dallas before week 10.
Yeah, onside. Here's why. George Pickens is an ass, all right? He's a heck of a football player. He's a good football player. Let's not go heck. He's a good football player. But he thinks he's Jerry Rice. So I look at George Pickens, or he thinks he's Terrell Owens. He thinks he's Chad Ochocinco. He thinks he's Randy Moss. Those are probably better fair-off comparisons in terms of guys that came with a lot of baggage and, you know, were problems in the locker room and things like that, instead of just throwing Jerry Rice out there. But in terms of the talent, he thinks he's Jerry Rice, and he ain't. There's the hot take of the day. So now you're putting him in Dallas, where who knows if Dak Prescott can make it through a full season. And you also have CeeDee Lamb there. The Cowboys could win games, and if George Pickens doesn't get his target, then he's going to be upset if he doesn't get his catches. So do I think he'll be disgruntled in Dallas before week 10? Like, will there be a moment, especially when you're in a culture where they beg for drama, where George Pickens will have one outburst from the start of the season until week 10? Yeah, I think so. So the offside streak is over. We go onsides.
All right, so over the weekend, the Browns hosted their rookie minicamp with all eyes mostly on Shador. Although Dylan Gabriel got the first snap at quarterback, and after the practice, Gabriel was open about competing with Shador.
You're coming in here as the third round pick. Shador's coming in as the fifth round pick, yet he brings a lot of the social media and the entourage and the hype and all the hoopla and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So what is your sort of mindset or approach to that whole notion of that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, life of simplicity is a life full of, you know, focus. Life of, you know, complexity comes with life of distractions. But for me, I'm focused. I'm simple. I know what I want to accomplish.
With that, though, what was your reaction when you found out they did draft Shador after they drafted you?
Yeah, I love it. You know, I love it because of who it is. You know, I think just for us both, you can learn from one another. But also, it's not just us two in the room. At least for right now, it is. But, you know, going into the year, Kenny, Joe, and even Deshaun, just a bunch of guys who played a bunch of ball that we can all learn from one another.
So on to offsides, Gabriel will start the season higher on the depth chart than Shador.
I did see today, and remember, this is rookie minicamp. So, like, who gives a crap at minicamp, excuse me. But it was Zach Jackson. He joined the Ultimate Cleveland Sports Show. And he said, They asked him who was better between the two quarterbacks, and it was Shador and Dillon Gabriel. And he said, it's not close. Shador Sanders. Now, you have guys standing around in shorts and a t-shirt. Let's be real. Shador's shorts are probably worth like $700 to begin with. Dillon Gabriel's probably wearing like $12.99 shorts, if we're just being honest. So it's not surprising that Shador Sanders looks better. And also, yeah, here's a little newsflash for you. I would anticipate Shador Sanders looking better instead of the low-hanging fruit joke on the clothes, because Shador Sanders is a better quarterback in terms of how most of us projected this to be when we went into the NFL draft. So logically, you would think, right, I'm going to say Shador should be number two over Dillon Gabriel, and I do believe that. But the Browns have this, like, sick obsession over Dillon Gabriel. They took him in the third round when no one else was going to. And they had him as his second quarterback, right? It was Nathan Zagora who told us they had him as second quarterback after Cam Ward. So I do believe the quarterback battle is really between Joe Flacco and Kenny Pickett. One will win the job, the other will get released. And then I think the Browns, because they love Gabriel so much, are going to put Gabriel 2 and then Shador Sanders 3 on the depth chart. So Gabriel will start the season higher on the depth chart than Shador. It shouldn't be the case, but I think it will because of how much the Browns love him, and they've already tipped that hand. So I will go on sides.
All right, Jordan Hudson was not with Bill Belichick.
Oh, I'm so tired of this conversation with Jordan Hudson. Anytime someone mentions the name Jordan Hudson right now, it's an immediate, just turn off the radio for me. But we continue the question. Don't turn off your radio, folks.
Well, she was competing in the Miss Maine beauty pageant over the weekend. Unfortunately, she finished second runner-up, crushing her hopes of competing in...
So she finished third? Second runner-up?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, so third place. So that crushed her hopes of competing in and winning in Miss USA. On to offsides, Hudson will be a distraction for Bill and UNC all season long.
I guess eventually we'll have to start caring about the games. But I understand why this is a headline, Stu. But you have people that are like, oh, this is a distraction that what, Bill Belichick went to his girlfriend's beauty pageant? Like, isn't that what any significant other would do? If your significant other was at a big event, you would go? Now, I thought the biggest loser here was the father of Jordan Hudson having to sit next to Belichick. Like, that just didn't look right. What are they talking about? Because that's got to be bizarre. If your daughter is 24 and she's dating someone that's 73, you probably have a lot in common in terms of just... you grew up in the same time, but that's got to be bizarre knowing that dude's going home. Even though he's the greatest coach of all time, that dude's going home with your daughter. Hudson will be a distraction for Bill and UNC all season long. I feel like this is just one of those stories that people aren't going to let it get away. So, yeah, I guess I'll go on sides here.
All right, a few years back, TNT landed the great one, Wayne Gretzky, to serve as an analyst on their NHL coverage, while Fox landed the NFL GOAT Tom Brady. Well, NBC is doing them one better, announcing today that Michael Jordan will be a special contributor next season as they return to broadcasting NBA games. On such offsides, MJ will be great on the air.
I think it will be interesting because you're going to want to hear what Michael Jordan has to say. But what is he going to say? And are you going to get the unfiltered Michael Jordan? Are you going to get the killer Michael Jordan? Or are you just going to get the Michael Jordan that whenever he's in public now, he acts like he doesn't want to be in public and all he wants to do is just golf and fish? So that's a concern in terms of how personable Michael Jordan will be. I think he'll be fine, but great, great. You know how I'm very strict, and I don't use great often. Great is a little bit of a stretch for me to say right now, so I will go offsides.
Offsides.
The Nuggets lost game 4 at home versus the Thunder, evening the series at 2 games apiece. Now, 3-time MVP Nikola Jokic has been in a bit of a slump, shooting under 40% in 3 straight games for the first time since 2018, while also seeing his points and assists per game drop significantly and his turnovers nearly doubling. Onside, offsides, the Nuggets can still win the series if Jokic continues to struggle.
I don't think so, offside, but I will say both of these Western Conference series, it feels like neither team, whether you look at the Nuggets series up against the Thunder or you look at the Golden State Warriors up against the Timberwolves, even when these teams win, it's not all that impressive. It's not like they're saying, okay, we're the team to beat in this series. Both of these series, I know it depends who gets there and out of the Eastern Conference. And many people, right, going into the postseason thought the Thunder were the best team. But, like, if the Celtics find a way to get through, I think they'll beat any of these four teams in the Western Conference. And the Celtics even have been all that impressive with the way that they played their first two games up against the Knicks before salvaging it on Saturday. And we'll see what happens tonight. It's weird. The games have been fun to watch, but there's been a lot of uninspiring play where you don't really know how to get a read on this postseason. But if Nikola Jokic doesn't play better, that's going to be a tough ask to go get two more wins up against what a lot of people believe is the best team in the West and maybe the best team in the league in the Oklahoma City Thunder. So the Nuggets still win this series. If Jokic continues to struggle, I will go offside.
Offside!
The Rockies are the worst team in baseball this year and are on pace to be the worst team in MLB history.
They make the White Sox look good.
Yeah.
From last year. So, that was last year, right? When the White Sox had 121 or whatever it was?
They were horrible, and the Rockies might be worse. With a record of 7-33, Colorado have an all-time worst 175 winning percentage and were embarrassed by the Padres on Saturday 21-0. Now, despite winning yesterday, the team fired longtime skipper Bud Black, and Dodgers manager Dave Roberts said, quote, "I don't think Casey Stengel could change the outcome of that ball club. It's not the manager's fault," end of quote. Onto all sides, the Rockies were justified in firing Black after their bad start.
Yeah, they could do so. It's their team. And when you're 7-33, I understand firing the manager. But, like, there are teams that aren't set up the right way, like the Pirates and the Rockies as well. So I'm not going to say that they weren't justified in firing the manager. But if I'm Bud Black, I'm, like, sitting there saying, thank you for firing me. Because now I don't have to be attached to this any longer. So, yeah, they're justified in firing Bud Black to start the season. I have no problem with that on sides.
All right, last one. On Saturday, Mets pitching prospect Jonah Tong was throwing a perfect game for AA Binghamton in a 7-inning shortened game. However, after throwing 99 pitches, Tong was taken out of the game with just one out remaining
for
the perfecto. And as you can hear here, the fans were not very happy.
Tong is at 99 pitches, and they're going to make the call to the bullpen. Tong.
All eight people in the background.
Will depart, much to the dismay of this crowd, hoping to witness a perfect game thrown exclusively by him. But an ovation, a big one, as he comes towards the dugout.
All I can think about last year is when Paul Skeens got taken out of a no-hit bid.
Oh, that's right.
In the summer. I was going right off into vacation, and Samter or Stu said, oh, they're taking him out of the game. I'm like, they took him out? What? I was driving to the Poconos. It was like an awful announcing headline. I couldn't even get to a rest stop yet. It was already all over the internet, and I lost my mind. I blew a gasket on the air. So ask the question, and they'll give you the answer.
So, onstage, offsides, you're okay pulling a minor league pitcher who's one out away from a perfect game to save his arm?
Usually I would say, yeah, I understand it. But this is a 7-inning shortened game. He threw 99 pitches, and they were one out away? One out? Right?
One out, yep.
7-8 more pitches max? Like, really? So in this circumstance, I'm not okay with it. In other circumstances, because it's minor league baseball, like, who cares? I would understand it. But in this case, absolutely not. I would go offside.
Offside.
All righty, that will do it. Zach Gilb Show, Infinity Sports Network, a little onside, offside on a Monday. We will take a timeout, and when we do come on back, we got to get to the way that this Vegas Golden Knights game ended over the weekend, because it was one of the craziest things that I've ever seen, and we'll talk about some of the craziest endings ever to a game that you've ever seen in the history of sports. We'll do that next. Zach Gilb Show, Infinity Sports Network. You got game four tonight between the Golden Knights and the Edmonton Oilers. Edmonton is up 2-1 in this series. The way that that game ended on Saturday was just absolutely redonkulous. It was crazy. We have the play-by-play of that. So this made it 4-3 right at the end of the game. Riley Smith scores the game winner. I think he was the only one that knew that it did go in. It was almost like when Patrick Kane had that walk-off in what was, I believe, Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final. I think it was Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Final in Philadelphia, where he scored, and he was the only person that knew the puck went in. And Doc Emrick has talked about this before, the great Doc Emrick, who could be the greatest play-by-play broadcaster of all time. Could be. He said it's the worst call of his career because nobody knew what was going on in that moment. So let's hear how it sounded. I'm sure that Samter, like, kind of What, you would say you patched this one together?
I did nothing of the sort. This is completely natural.
Oh, really?
No. I patched it together.
I was going to say, I thought you would patch it together to make it sound audible for the listening audience. That's what I would assume.
I don't care about the listening audience.
Oh, that's not good.
Forget you guys. If you don't like it,
well,
deal
that's
with
not
it.
Good. We're going to put Samter on a pitch count here. Brendan Burke, Darren Pang, TNT. This is how it sounded as Raleigh. Of course, it's a former Ranger. He was a Ranger for a cup of coffee before going back to Vegas. And always these guys that look like they're dead with the Rangers. They go to these other teams and they have these huge goals. He had 2 goals in the game. And he ended up netting the game winner as the buzzer was basically going off. The horn was going off. Golden Knights win. They're on the board in this series. They're down 2-1. But this was the crazy finish, courtesy of our friends at TNT.
William Karlsson with 7 will chip it down the boards. There's nobody to help him. A centering feed. Here's Riley Smith. Wade shoots. Hit the post. Oh, he hit the post at the buzzer.
Referee was right there. Garrett Rank signaled no goal. As close as it gets. As close as
Vegas
it gets.
Vegas is celebrating.
I think this went in the net.
Vegas is celebrating a potential buzzer beater here in Edmonton.
This is a stunning way to end a hockey game, if that's the case. And how he had the presence of mind to fake the shot with the clock winding down. Waits and waits and waits. And it goes off the camera, didn't it? It went off the camera in the middle of the net.
It went off Draisaitl's stick.
Stick. And then off the camera there.
After
oh, my, it's a goal.
At 0.4, the puck completely crossed the line. Goal.
Wow.
You believe that?
Wow. Riley Smith. What a play.
So I'll say this. You know what ruins the moment a little bit? And it was a jaw-dropping moment. Now all these teams have the tablets on the bench because they have to review things. Like, for example, when you go to a basketball game, they have a guy that has a laptop right behind the bench and they're automatically reviewing the plays to tell the coach if they could challenge or not. It's the same thing, laptop, tablet, whatever, for hockey. So the players started celebrating on the ice like 10 seconds after we had no clue what was going on because the bench was like, no, that's a goal, that's a goal, that's a goal. I think it would have been more fun if you had to wait for the announcement. Like, remember when you had the Tuck Rule game and they were in the snow and the Patriot broadcast was like, oh, we're very biased. It was Gino Cappelletti and Gil Santos. Like, we're very biased, but we think his arm is his arm was going forward and it's an incomplete pass. I had to be careful of my words because I don't want Stu to think that I actually thought that that was a fumble or not. But anyway, there was like a wait and a suspense. Here you knew what was going to happen just based off the reaction by the Vegas Knights bench because they were able to review it. So that was very cool to watch. So let's go around the room here. Best ending to a game that you've ever seen. Stu, I'll start you off. What do you got?
All right, so mine is college football related. It was a little over 10 years ago in what was, I think, after Michigan Ohio State, the second best rivalry, Auburn-Alabama.
Oh, great one.
So it was a tied game late in the fourth quarter.
Real quick, 20-second time out here. When you said college football, the first thing I thought of was Boise State-Oklahoma in the ending of that Fiesta Bowl.
Right.
I thought you were trolling Samter, who that game was in Glendale, Arizona. Right, Samter? That game was in Glendale, Arizona. And Samter left the game early. So that was a bad moment for Samter all those years ago. But that's where I thought you were going. But yeah, this is a great one.
Yeah, and I remember I was here. I was cutting tape. And I know our friend Ack was doing the scoreboard show. And
don't you fall? It's unbelievable. I can't believe what I just saw.
I can't remember if it was right before the show ended or right after the show ended, but we were all in the newsroom huddled up and could not believe what we were watching. But Alabama attempted a long field goal, and this is what happened.
Well, I guess if this thing comes up short, he can field it and run it out. All right, here we go. 56-yarder. Does not have the leg. And Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone. He'll run it out to the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game. Auburn's going to win the football game. He ran the missed field goal back. He ran it back 109 yards. They're not going to keep him off the field tonight. Holy cow. Oh, my God. Auburn wins. Auburn has won the Iron Bowl. Auburn has won the Iron Bowl in the most unbelievable fashion you will ever see. I cannot believe it. 34-28.
You know, you look back at some college games. I mentioned Boise State, Oklahoma. That one between Alabama and Auburn in the Iron Bowl was phenomenal. Up against USC was also a classic. Doug Flutie. Like, there's just so many that you remember. The band is on the field. Just these crazy endings that you go through just in college football. Mine's not college football related. Hopefully I didn't steal Samter's, because I started to sound like Samter there just when we asked the question and he started giving us a list. How many do you have on your list here before we get to yours?
Oh, man, I have to double count. I think like 15.
Okay, well then pause. I'll give you my ending first. Stu's ending is an absolute great one. And can I make an admission on this one? I missed it live. A buddy of mine was introducing us to his serious girlfriend at the time. They ended up getting married. They have a beautiful kid now. And they wanted to go out for Chinese on Long Island for dinner. And I was stalling people off and waiting and waiting and waiting. And eventually I lost that battle. And it ended up being one of the most iconic endings ever, not only to a college football game, but to a game period. So I ended up seeing that replayed over and over and over again. Let's go to mine. I think if you know me, this is very easy. Like, Stu, there is zero surprise here with the call that I'm about to play, right?
I would say no surprise.
So let's just get to it. This is the Patriots Radio Network.
Russell Wilson extends the hands. He has it. Wilson, quick throw. And it's good. Intercepted. Intercepted by Malcolm Butler. Butler has it at the one. Malcolm Butler stepped in front of the throw.
No way.
And the Patriots have possession with 20 seconds to go in Super Bowl 49 with a four-point lead over the Seahawks.
It's got to be one of the dumbest calls offensively in Super Bowl history. You are on the one-yard line, and you have number 24, and you drop back pass. Are you kidding me? And also, they ran a pick play, an illegal pick. You deserve an interception.
That is Scott Zolak and Bob Soucy on the Patriots Radio Network. Zolak's call as the color analyst there may be better than the actual moment, and the moment is just flat out stupid good. And you got to remember, I know no one's going to have a small violin playing for me, but the Patriots at the time won 3 Super Bowls, but they lost a 2 to the Giants off the crazy David Tyree catch, the crazy Mario Manningham catch. The David Tyree catch was in Glendale, Arizona. They're in Glendale, Arizona again for this Super Bowl. And you have that acrobatic, just stupid catch down the sideline, the right sideline, that Butler swatted the ball away. It was up in the air and off the carom. It was caught. And then the ball is on the one. Dont'a Hightower made a great play to keep the ball at the one, where he bench pressed the offensive lineman to go tackle Marshawn Lynch. And then boom, Pete Carroll and Daryl Bevell decide to throw the ball. And the Butler did it. So that's the craziest ending, in my opinion, to a game that I've ever seen. All righty, Samter. I think I know where you're going for this one. What is the sport?
You actually called it earlier.
Oh, so it's college football?
It's college football.
Oh, I thought you were going college basketball. I thought you were going to go with the Leitner shot.
Leitner was on my list of 15, but no, it was not my final answer.
Okay, so Stu has the kick six. Craziest ending ever. Mine is Malcolm Butler, as we do a little homage to what happened on Saturday with Riley Smith getting that game-winning goal as the time was expiring to make the series 2-1. What's the craziest ending to a game? Give me some of yours on the list first.
All right, so some of mine on my list. Obviously, Leitner was on there. Bill Buckner, 86 World Series. The Chris Webber timeout against UNC. Mm-hmm. NC State, Lorenzo Charles. Yeah. Dunk to win the championship. Kirk Gibson, game one of the World Series, homering on one leg off of Dennis Eckersley, who was unhittable. The catch, Dwight Clark. Reggie Miller, 8 points in 6 seconds.
Axe getting a kick. He just goes, hey, are you going to give one? No, this is you counted 10 already? Axe is very impressed with you here. Go ahead, continue.
We got Doug Flutie, Hail Mary.
Oh.
The immaculate reception, maybe the greatest play in football history to win the game in the playoffs for the Steelers.
Yeah.
Franco Harris. This one, if you don't remember it, the River City Relay. Saints-Jaguars 2003. The Saints needed to win the last 2 games of the season to make the playoffs. They're down by 7. On the last play of the game, they throw 3 laterals, score the touchdown.
And miss the extra point.
and they missed the extra point and got eliminated from the playoffs.
That was when, you said?
2003.
I remember this. I was at a Shiva call, I'm pretty sure. I was at a Shiva call for someone that I didn't know that passed away that my parents made me go to when I was a little kid, and I made them put on the football game, and I remember seeing the missed kick. Aaron Brooks was the quarterback. Yeah.
Absolutely incredible.
Who was the kid? Was it John Casey?
John Carney, I think.
Oh, John Carney. Yeah.
You've got the Music City Miracle, right? Yep. The Bills and Titans. You have Bobby Thompson, the shot we heard around the world. Bucky freaking Dent, Yankees, Red Sox. The one that I was actually...
Coming up next, the JR Sport Brief on the Infinity Sports Network.
Initially, I was going to go with Stephon Matteau, Game 7, 94. Eastern Conference Finals. Valerie Salipukin scored the tying goal with 7 seconds left in regulation in Game 7, and then double overtime, Matteau comes back. Yeah. But no, instead, you called it before 2007. I was at the game, Fiesta Bowl in Arizona, and Oklahoma was down by 8 with about a minute and a half to go. They scored a touchdown, got the two-point conversion. Boise State had the ball. This happened.
Zabransky, a dangerous throw, and it's intercepted into the end zone, Marcus Walker.
That gave Oklahoma the lead with about a minute left in the game. I left to beat the traffic.
Paid by the
I
word
walked
today?
Out. And then after I left, in the union. Heading into the parking lot, this happened for Boise State.
Down the middle, James, the lateral to the corner of the end zone. Can you believe that? They do this a lot. Peretta to take the snap. He's going to throw it to the end zone. Touchdown. Boise State for the win. They hand it off to Johnson. Boise State has won the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl. Can you believe it?
We got a good laugh out of Safter's expense there when the microphones were off. Ack and I. Hey, continue.
No, that's the end of it. That was the most incredible ending to a game I can remember. Unfortunately, I didn't get to see it live, but
and the then fact Ian that Johnson proposed to his girlfriend.
Yes, the pick
six. Does
anyone
know her last name?
Smith?
No. Samter. No, not Samter. It's a Greek last name, Papadikes.
Papadikas or Papadikes?
Papadikes.
But the best part about it, he just went through 20 games, yes. And you missed one of the biggest ones of all time.
The almanac is here.
Uh-oh, Ack, what'd I miss?
The band is on the field.
You know what? I had that on my list, ran out of time. But that was a good one.
Yes. So the reason why I know, this was the juvenile Zach Gelb, the reason why I know the last name of the lady that Ian Johnson ended up proposing to, my friends and I thought it was the funniest thing that her last name was spelled P-O-P-A-D-I-C-S. So that was my computer password growing up as a kid because we were very dirty-minded. And the hint, you know how you used to put a hint on your password if you forget it? It was Boise State running back or whatever it was, girlfriends. Yeah. So that was the whole thing.
And we did not say it.
We did not say it.
Zach's account.
Well, it's not anymore. We did not say it in the Greek way. You know, Papadikes. We said it how you would think young kids would end up saying that. Anyway, before I get fired, this is Zach Gelb on the Affinity Sports Network. We should just let say if any day I want a day off or if the throat's hurting, just let Samter go. I'll get up and go home.
100 Samters.
Yeah. You know what? 100 Santers would beat one Zach Gelb. You want to know why?
100 Santers.
One of them could talk you to death. 100 of them would actually kill you. 1,000%. All righty, we'll come on back with the news brief update time first. Here is Ack.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Let's go to New Saints coach Kellen Moore on Derek Carr's retirement.
First of all, you respect and appreciate so much that Derek's done in this league and for the way he's done it, the on-the-field performance, the off-the-field person that he's showcased and the impact he's had on so many people in this profession is really, really special. And so certainly, coming here, I've always had so much respect and appreciation for him. And, as we've gone through this process, obviously this is how it kind of ultimately was settled. It was really good communication through the whole process as far as navigating this. Again, challenging circumstances with him being injured at the end of the year and then just kind of navigating things throughout the whole offseason process. And so, I think, Derek, the people that are a part of his life have communicated really well with the Saints. I think there's been really good communication. And so, we feel like it was done the right way.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think there was good communication here. At least just judging by the way that Derek Carr has presented himself recently, it doesn't seem like there was good communication. It seemed like he was annoyed at the organization. And I would not be shocked if a year from now we're talking about a potential Derek Carr return somewhere else. I don't know who would want him, but I could see him maybe trying to get back onto a football field. Here is Kellen Moore in his current QB competition now with Carr out of the room.
All three quarterbacks, we're going to let all three of these guys roll, and they've all earned these opportunities. We'll let Jake, Spencer and Tyler, all three kind of go through this process. We'll play patience, let these guys compete, let them get into training camp, and, naturally these guys will kind of take care of itself.
And let's go to Shador Sanders. How will he prove the doubters wrong?
My job here isn't to prove people wrong. Like, I prove myself right. I fully have self-belief. What those people say, that's just their opinion. So I don't truly care. They don't really live in my mental space about that type of stuff. It really doesn't do anything for me.
My job is not to prove people wrong. It's to prove myself right. That's a good quote right there by Shador Sanders. Let's go to Pablo Torre on the Dominique Foxworth show. He has a surprise prediction about Bill Belichick at Chapel Bill.
What happens next for Coach Belichick? Do you think that he makes it to week one? Is it getting that contentious over there?
I think there's a chance, an absolutely real chance, that he doesn't. Reason I say that is because even before the Jordan Hudson thing became as public, the date that matters the most is June 1st. On June 1st, the buyout of Bill Belichick goes from $10 million to $1 million if Bill wanted the escape hatch. And so the question everybody is asking is, are things so dysfunctional behind the scenes when it comes to the power struggle, when it comes to what they are telling Bill to do? Don't have Jordan around anymore. Stop behaving in the way that you have. Basically telling him for the first time, really, that you're an employee and not the boss of this building in the way that he may have been assuming he would be, then there is the ability for him to get out of it. Is this something that's sustainable, right? Is that fireable? What does he have to do to get fired? These are all active questions.
The guy is sleeping with a 24-year-old who has become his publicist. We are all, even though it's weird, we are all overreacting to this. Why would this prevent him from coaching the football team? And why would he walk away before coaching a game at UNC? I don't get that one. Let's go to Nikola Jokic and the offensive struggles he's been having up against Oklahoma City.
They're playing really good defense on me. They're really into my body, handsy, physical. I think I missed like 2-3 open looks tonight. So it's a little bit of everything, they're shrinking the ball, they're shrinking the floor for me. They're having a guy behind a defender. So it's a little bit of everything, So it's, I need to do a better job, of course, but it's part of the game.
And then let's go to Charles Barkley. He said the Nuggets are screwed by the quick turnaround. They played Friday night and then they had the earlier game on Sunday, both times staying in Denver.
I thought what the NBA did to them was unfair. Making them play late Friday night, then an early afternoon game, I thought that was unfair. I truly believe that.
Both teams had to do it.
They had a day in between.
Yeah, but they got more depth. They got a much OKC got 12
team.
Players.
Well, play
Denver
more guys.
That's stupid. Let's hear the coach of the Nuggets, David Adelman. Did the short turnaround lead to the Game 4 loss?
No, I'm not going to say that.
Good.
I don't want to say that. I will say that I think both teams were very tired coming off an unbelievably physical overtime battle on a late Friday night. So if it affected us, it surely affected them as well. I mean, both of us had super tired legs. So it was about who's going to make that final run. And we got up 8. I thought we were making the push. And to their credit, they were the ones to make the final run. And we made mistakes late. You can call them mental mistakes, physical, whatever it was. We didn't play well enough the last 6 minutes to win a playoff game.
Oh, you had a day off in between. Charles Barkley, yeah, it's terrible what the NBA did. Give me a break. Let's hear Sam Bennett, his third period goal yesterday. This put the Panthers up 2-0, which was the final score. Maple Leafs took a 2-0 series lead. Now the Panthers got both on their home ice as this series goes back to Canada into Toronto. Let's listen up. This is Dougie Plagans on the Panthers Radio Network.
Bennett walks in front, makes a move, and he scores! Sam Bennett gives the Panthers a 2-0 lead with 7:50 to play here in the third. Playoff Sam doubles the Panthers' lead.
Scale of 1 to 10, Stu, what's your rating?
7.2.
Okay. Samter?
6.97. It was fine.
4.3.
Yeah.
That was really underwhelming. You're up 2-0. I know you're defending Stanley Cup champs and it's a second round, but this puts you up 2-0 in the game in the third period. Enough time has eclipsed by. I would expect a little bit more energy. Let's hear Josh Boogaard on the Stars Radio Network. This makes it Dallas 4-2. Mikko Rantanen, this was his 17th point in his last 16th game, or sixth game.
Game one ended with this same scoreline. The Stars, high slot, walking Rantanen. He shoots. He scores! Mikko Rantanen, the legend grows, and so does the lead for Dallas.
1 to 10, Stu?
7.8.
Okay. Yeah, Santer?
I'll go 8-1 for like a random second-round playoff game. The fact that Rantanen has been that good, I just thought that was great.
So they won the game. They're up 2-1 now in the series up against the Winnipeg Jets. This made it 4-2 with 4:40 into the third period. I don't know, guys. I'm expecting a little bit more energy there. It gives you a two-goal lead. It was much better than the Panthers Radio Network right there. 6-1? Like, good cadence. I'm expecting my hockey guys to be like the dude in Colorado or be like the dude in Tampa Bay and Dave Mishkin. I need them going nuts. I need them screaming. I used to love Randy Moeller, who used to do the games on the radio. He would do the play-by-play. He'd be like, he shoots, he scores! Ma, where's the meatloaf? As he would just throw out like movie references and things like that. Like, come on. I need a little bit more energy from these guys. Radio play-by-play and hockey playoff, I have a high standard.
Mike Lang, scratch my back with that hacksaw. Rest in peace.
Yes, rest in peace indeed. All righty, we'll take a break. We'll come on back. A hoof from Stephon Marbury coming up at 5:35 p.m. Eastern, but we return. Does Aaron Rodgers have a new destination, a new suitor, or is it still all on him and the Steelers to get a deal done? We'll talk next.